What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 42 of the Halving Report podcast with myself, your host, Brad Mines. The price of Bitcoin is about $46,000, $59,000 Canadian. This is a $13,000 increase from our last episode of the Halving Report. We are about 9 months post the block reward halving that occurred on May 11th in 2020, which has led us to a widely anticipated bull run that mimics past halving cycles. It's important to understand these cycles before investing into Bitcoin and or cryptocurrency. The news of all news has dropped this past Monday, February 9th of 2021, when it was announced that Tesla bought $1.5 billion in Bitcoin and plans to accept it as payment. Bitcoin has surged thousands of dollars since the news hit mainstream this past Monday, and many people are anticipating what other companies will be next to announce their position in Bitcoin. I personally love Tesla longer than I've been a fan of Bitcoin, and many Bitcoiners are proponents of Elon Musk and his vision. I think the GameStop fiasco combined with the Twitter meme trolls was enough to get Elon Musk to take the orange pill. Today, we have Nick McCollum on the show. Nick is a 24-year-old Canadian developer, teacher, investor, and is the current director of growth for Passive. Passive is a portfolio management tool that helps investors reallocate investments to meet your portfolio's target allocation with one simple click. Nick, can you give us a little bit of a background, just to give a little bit of context for the listeners?
Absolutely. So I'm a software developer and a professional investor, I guess, who's worked in investment management my entire career. My passion with the markets really started when I was in college, and I originally enrolled in a biology degree thinking I might want to go be a medical doctor. But what I quickly realized was that after studying some plant biology and animal physiology was that biology wasn't really a true passion of mine. So I went to my academic advisor and I asked them, what can I switch into that will still allow me to graduate in 4 years? Because I don't want to have to spend any extra time here if I don't have to. They recommended that I switch into a math degree. So that's what I did. And it turns out that a lot of the good summer internships and jobs for math majors are in finance or accounting or technology. So the summer after that, I went and got an internship at a large mutual fund provider here in Canada. That was a really awesome and unique experience because at that job, there was people managing all sorts of different investment strategies. So in one corner, you might have had someone who was doing fundamental equity research. In another corner, you might have had someone trading bonds. And in another corner, you might have had someone doing something more exotic, like doing synthetics or derivatives. So that gave me broad exposure to the financial markets, and I've been, I guess, hooked on them ever since.
And can you give us an overview of what Passive does for their users?
You pair Passive directly to your brokerage account. You set a target portfolio, and then Passive does all of the legwork to figure out what you need to buy or sell to get invested into your target portfolio. Then we allow you to rebalance your portfolio with one click. So we send the trades off to your broker, they get executed, and then your brokerage sends you back trade confirmations. And once that's done, Passive monitors your account every day so that if your account ever drifts too far from your target portfolio, we'll send you an email notification prompting you to log in and rebalance again just with one click.
What's happening in the background then when you hit that rebalance button?
So we compare your actual portfolio, so what's actually in your account, to the target portfolio that you specified. And then we calculate recommended trades based on that. When you click rebalance, those trades gets executed. So I'll just provide an example because I feel like it's easier to understand with an actual portfolio. Let's say you wanted to be invested 50% in Tesla and 50% in Apple, and you own that 50-50 portfolio. And then Apple goes up and Tesla goes down. So now instead of being at 50-50, you're at 60-40. Passive would recommend that you sell some of the 60 to buy some of the 40. And when you click rebalance, we'll execute those trades to get you back in line with that 50-50 allocation that you specified.
So no matter how complex my portfolio may be, it will make all those trades needed to completely rebalance itself.
Yeah, you can have as many accounts as you want paired to your Passive account. So you could have 15 different brokerage accounts if you want. There's no cap on that. And you also are able to connect to accounts at different institutions. So if you had some of your investments at TD Ameritrade and you had some of your other investments at Interactive Brokers or something like that, Passive would provide you one centralized dashboard for you to manage all of your investment portfolio in one place.
So what do I need to get signed up for Passive to start out?
The first thing you need, I guess, is a brokerage account. So we don't actually take custody of your assets. So in order for you to use Passive, you have to have your investments somewhere. And then that's pretty much all you need. You can create an account on Passive. We have a free version and a paid version. So what we always recommend to people is to try the free version out first to see if you like it. And then you can pair your brokerage account, set your target portfolio. And if you decide to use the paid version, we don't take any money out of your brokerage account or anything like that. We wanted our pricing to be as simple and as transparent as possible. So you pay for Passive with your credit card, just like you do for your Netflix or for your Disney Plus subscription. And it's just $99 a year paid with your credit card.
On my show, I tend to focus on Bitcoin mostly. So does Passive integrate with many Bitcoin exchanges or crypto exchanges? And do you guys execute those trades as well?
Yeah. So we just launched an integration with Kraken, which is one of the largest cryptocurrency exchanges out there. So Passive provides you a really great place if you you want to manage your own cryptocurrency index fund and kind of, you know, invest broadly across a bunch of different coins and rebalance over time, Passive provides a really nice, easy interface for you to do that.
Now, I see you teach Python computer program as well.
Yeah. So I'm a big proponent, you know, for education and helping people learn to code. So I have a couple of courses on my website and, you know, try to put out a lot of free content on kind of what I'm learning and building just on my blog.
What made you get into teaching and coaching?
Well, when I guess, was learning how to code, I was really a big benefactor of other people who were willing to share knowledge on their websites. So a good example of that is Wes Boss, who's a fellow Canadian, and he teaches JavaScript on his website. He has some courses that he sells, and he's actually kind of a way bigger name in the education space than you might think, because that's actually what he does full time. He's made quite the business out of teaching people how to code JavaScript. He's a really good teacher, and I was always really inspired by how many people that he was able to help by putting some free and even some paid content out there on his website. So that was kind of the motivation for me, was just learning from guys like Wes.
And is Wes on Twitter?
Yeah, Wes's handle. I imagine he's probably at Wes Boss, WESBOS.
Cool, man. Definitely check him out. You work mostly with Python. Do you work with other computer programming languages as well?
Yeah, so I spend most of my time coding in Python. I'm a back-end developer primarily, so I work with like databases and like application logic. So a lot of that's Python. For databases, I'm a big fan of PostgreSQL. So that's just like a SQL-based programming language. It's an open source relational database. And for front-end stuff, I work with JavaScript, although I'm less familiar with that than I am with Python. And familiar with a lot of the big JavaScript frameworks like React and Vue and those sorts of things.
Cool. And on your website where you help others learn how to program, how much do you charge for your courses?
I have two main courses and then one free course. The free course is a lot popular than the paid courses, unsurprisingly. But the two paid courses are $49 and $99.
I see like there's a lot of different Python resources out there on internet that are free on the internet. So how do you add value with your course?
For me, a big thing that I always wanted to help people with was to, you know, be accessible and be available for questions. So I made my course primarily to help people who want to learn Python for finance. So if you're a financial analyst or an accountant and you want to automate some of your workflows, Python is a great tool for that. And my courses are kind of designed specifically with financial examples and with the tools and techniques that you need to kind of work in finance. So that's kind of like, I wanted to niche down and to teach Python for finance, and I wanted to be really accessible. So on the accessibility front, I have like a Slack community where people just come in and, you know, they can ask other people in the Slack community for help, or they can ask me for help. And I try to be really responsive there.
And what kind of level of knowledge should people have when they come onto your website, reading your blogs and your GitHub?
Depends on kind of what you're looking to achieve. I guess on my just blog where I write public content that's available to everyone, a lot of that stuff's pretty nerdy and pretty advanced, but that's because, you know, It's public, so people are going to be Googling specific things about certain technologies or languages or frameworks. And if they find that stuff, that's great. For the paid stuff, my cheaper course is Python Fundamentals, and that's designed for someone who's never coded in their life. It takes you through everything from installing Python on your computer and coding for the first time to things more advanced along the way. And then my second course builds directly upon my first course, so a lot of people actually buy them together.
Now, many of my listeners are new to investing, and I want to go into some of the topics that you brought up when we first touched base about doing the podcast. Could you start by maybe explaining what an ETF is before going on to your position of, you know, the growing importance of ETFs?
Yeah. So an ETF is an exchange traded fund. It's just an acronym for exchange traded fund. And an ETF is basically one of the two major types of investment funds that are available to investors today, with the other main type being a mutual fund. So ETFs have a number of advantages over mutual funds, which are causing them to rise in popularity and importance across the market. So I would say there's three main advantages to ETFs over mutual funds. The first one is that ETFs offer superior liquidity than mutual funds do. So an ETF, you can trade it at any point throughout the trading day, just like you can with stocks. So that compares to mutual funds, where mutual funds only trade once per day at the end of the day. So ETFs offer better liquidity from that point of view. ETFs are also much more fee effective. So their fees are way lower than comparable mutual funds. So investors who invest in ETFs just pay less in fees than they would if they invested in a similar mutual fund. And then the third reason why many people prefer ETFs over mutual funds is that they have much better tax characteristics. So in an ETF, when you buy the ETF, you don't actually pay tax on the performance of that ETF until the moment where you go out and decide to sell it. Whereas with a mutual fund, you actually, if you're an investor in that fund, you have to pay tax on the performance of the fund each and every year that you own it. So ETFs allow you to defer your taxes, where mutual funds actually don't allow for that. So because of those three advantages of ETFs over mutual funds, they've been really taking a lot of share from mutual funds and been really kind of taking the investment industry by storm.
So you see ETFs as kind of the future of wealth management, or where do you see the future of wealth management?
I would say, yeah, ETFs are definitely a huge part of the future of wealth management. I also think that because of the rising importance of technology and more software tools and platforms that are going to be available to people. I think people are going to have access to a lot more custom tools, custom investing platforms. And broadly speaking, I think people will become more and more able to build custom portfolios over time and kind of disintermediate financial advisors as the technology enables them to.
Speaking specifically about Bitcoin custody and crypto custody, being in the community, kind of pulled in two different directions of custodial services. And then sometimes you get people that say, not your keys, not your coins, or maybe more recently, no keys, no cheese. But where do you stand in terms of crypto custody? And should you keep that safe in your private wallet, or should you have custodial services?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It kind of depends on what you're trying to achieve. If you just want some cheap and effective cryptocurrency exposure, I think managed solutions, a Coinbase or a Kraken or something like that, I think those are good solutions for a big swath of investors. But there's like another subset of cryptocurrency users who want the anonymity and like the decentralized and disintermediated characteristics of Bitcoin and the other cryptocurrencies. And if that's really what you're trying to capture, then I think a private wallet's kind of the only way to do it.
Do you partake in both sides of it?
No, I'm not a private wallet guy per se. I'm much more interested in just kind of having diversified exposure and potentially, I'm actually, investigating building a Bitcoin miner rig in my own house. So the actual computer infrastructure component is pretty interesting.
Definitely seem like someone that wants to get into the nitty and gritty of things and build a full node, build miners. Certainly interesting stuff to me as well. And hopefully down the road, I can dive a little bit deeper into those topics as well. Do you have any final comments, or maybe just let us know where to follow you and learn more?
Yeah, so I guess if you want to find out what we're doing at Passive, just check us out at passive.com. That's PASSIV.com. You can also check out my personal website, nickmccollum.com. And if you have any questions, you can email me at nick@nickmccollum.com.
Awesome, Nick. Thanks again for coming on to the podcast. I appreciate your time. Thanks for listening to episode 42 of The Halving Report. Please subscribe to the show, leave us a comment, review, or even a thumbs up will go a long way to help spread the good gospel of financial literacy, Bitcoin, and decentralized assets. We'll see you back next time.